Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 8 of the Overthrows podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at DefMango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. Apologies for being late today, guys. I was covering the PSL final, and clearly Jared was getting a haircut. You guys can see how the hair is far too short now.
I feel like that game went on for about 12 days.
Oh my God, it was long, but a really exciting final. And I see that we have a super chat already. So we'll take that first and then get into our itinerary for today.
Okay. Go.
All right. Shubham Patil asks, Luke Wood in Mumbai Indians, how do you rate him in T20s? Love. I've been following him very closely. Of course, I was covering the PSL. I think he's very, very impressive with the new ball. Brings in that left arm angle as well. And considering how Willie has retired from England and Topley is always injured, I feel like he needs to be on that plane to the USA and Caribbean. I think it's a sure shot thing. He plays the circuit all over the globe. And I'm really happy that he's landed his first, I believe it's his first big break in the IPL. And the Mumbai Indians have had a few injuries of their own, right? So it makes sense. And I hope he gets to start.
Yeah, he's an interesting player. I don't know if he's quite an IPL level player or even an international level player. I could see why you're saying that he is. I think he's maybe slightly below that, but this we're about to find out, right? Yeah. There was a game where who does he play for?
Played for Peshawar Zalmi.
Yeah, so he's playing for them in one game where they were like, I don't know, 50 for 5 or something, chasing 200. And just the way he went about it mathematically, and I think he ran out of steam towards the end of that, but it wasn't just slogging. There was a lot of clever batting involved there as well. Obviously, you know, he works on both sides of the ball. Bit of a late blooming cricketer in some ways. I don't know how old he is, but he's not young, is he? I think he's been around kind of the circuit for quite a while now. So, you know, there's a lot to like about him. Also, he's a double left-hander. I know that might sound weird, but he gives you variability in that he can bat left-handed and also he bowls left-arm. Like, it's not like he's just doing it on one side of the ball. So I think there's a lot there. I do, but whether he's quite that level that you need him to be, I'm not sure.
It's an interesting one, right? Because there's so many players who either bat left-handed or bowl left-handed, but don't do both. So I like the fact that you pointed out how he's a double left-hander. I think that
it's a new phrase I just invented for cricket, which is weird, but a pure left-hander, I don't know how to put it, but you know what I mean.
I mean, he provides a lot of utility and he's been playing lots of T20 cricket. So, yes. I mean, I like him and he's got a face card straight out of the Peaky Blinders. That's what he has, right? So he's got that going for him. Anyway, let's jump into all the stuff that we need to discuss today. First, we're going to come to Bangladesh versus Sri Lanka. We spoke of the T20I series in the previous episode of Overthrow, so you guys can go check that one out if you want to, you know, hear stuff on the T20 series. We're going to be talking about the ODIs, and it was a 3-match series. Bangladesh won by a margin of 2-1. Of course, they were playing at home, you know, and they do more often than not win at home. Their captain, Nazmul Hussain Shanto, who Jared is a huge fan of. It could be, I couldn't state it enough. It'll always go understated how much Jared likes him. And he scored an unbeaten 122 runs in the first ODI to take Bangladesh home by 6 wickets. And Jared, till the end of 2022, I checked this. So before these last, 14 odd months, Shanto averaged 14 on the dot in ODI cricket, and now he's brought that up to 33. So it's a great career arc, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I think, like a lot of Bangladeshi players, he comes in too early. He clearly has the game for international cricket. Whether he's ever going to be successful or not, I don't know. But he clearly has, something available to him on that level. And he had probably one of the worst starts of international. I mean, we've just seen Rajat Pattadar struggle a little bit, and who else have we had of recent times? There was someone else. But, sometimes players come in and they just slump at the wrong time and they get, thrown away. And he was probably lucky that they kept with him as long as they did. And now he's starting to look like that kind of player that can certainly help. So, look, I think there's a lot there to like with him when it comes to that sort of situation. But, yeah. Look, he's just, if you want to know why I like him, it's partly the backstory of how bad he was at the start, but it's also that he just looks really pretty when he bats. Like, there's something quite aesthetically pleasing about him that tickles me, and I enjoy watching him. And also, you know, I think there's a lot of people who just wrote him off, and it's kind of funny watching, you know, them having to eat their words. And but yeah, it was fantastic. I think I missed that game because it was a one day, and I was like, oh, I can't be bothered. There's PSL, WPL, like, you know, and then there's the Afghanistan Island. I've been watching some of those games. I was not going to sit down and watch an ODI. And afterwards, I was like, yeah, I've made a mistake there.
Of course you had. And I mean, he's also got the hair for it. If we ever do the hairstyles episode, like on Cricket Picks 10 years into the future, maybe Shanto gets in there because he's got that dead straight long hair at times. And I've just enjoyed him, you know, come into his own. He's, of course, captaining the ODI side and maybe even the T20 side, if I'm not wrong. So that's an interesting one right over there. And yeah, I mean, I'm happy to see some new generation players coming in with the bat for Bangladesh. He's certainly one of them. We have Ankush Raj, 16, Arko, Shubham Patil, Swaminathan Ramesh, Amit M, Sood Sanyam, Sheraton KD, Alan Thomas, and Amar and Harvey Holloway in the comments. Thank you so much for waiting, guys, for starters, and for interacting with us. And, you know, another main feature of this series, at least how I viewed it, was Bangladesh tried a fair few openers in this series, and none of whom are Tamim Iqbal, by the way. No prime ministers or anything are getting him back into the side now, it seems. Shomya Shakar, he made a comeback into the 11.
Yeah.
You mentioned players who look good when they bat. He's certainly one of them. And he scored 68 in the second game, got concussed in the third, and then was replaced by Tanzeed Hassan, who we saw Bangladesh stick with in the World Cup. He also scored 84 of 81 in that game. So they've got some good options now up top. Litton Das scored 2 ducks, and he's out of the side. He was axed mid-series. So they're going through quite the transition at the top, aren't they?
No, they are. I think, you know, I did a podcast with Issam maybe a year ago now. I can't remember when he was on, but, you know, we were talking about that there's a new generation of Bangladeshi players coming through, and they look at the game a little bit differently. They're more naturally aggressive. And it's clearly, you know, having an impact, I think, on the way they put pressure back on bowlers. You know, before they were kind of the accumulated team, right? Like, you knew they'd get somewhere between 230 and 265, right? And in a one day, and you hope that the either pitch helped their spinners or one of their quicks had a day out, and otherwise they weren't really always that handy. Whereas you look at them now and you're like, there's some guys there that can actually do some realistic damage and you know, put pressure back on you. And someone like Sumi Saka probably was a bit like the early Shanto. In fact, he probably had a better start to his career than Shanto, and then really, really dropped off. I still think there's a too big a gap between their domestic cricket and their international cricket. I don't know how you overcome that in a short period, you know, but we've seen that with other countries as well. That's, you know, that's not just a Bangladesh thing, but it does feel like some of these players get thrown in. And I do think they're also obsessed with youth at times rather, you know, who was the player that they picked recently who came back, in his 30s, and he basically hadn't played for ages. But I thought that was a really, really good sign, like of them going, no, we're going to pick a player who's actually in form and doing well. And I don't think that player was going to go on and have a great career, but I think they were thinking, you know, it's a couple of World Cups coming up, you know, maybe he will do well. They're just little signs that Bangladesh cricket is kind of, you know, getting to that other level. And there's plenty of talent there. It's probably still not completely, you know, a full team, but there's plenty of talent there. And I think it's a sign of, you know what it's like, even those sort of mad days of Pakistan cricket where like a player would come in, they do something really good, then they disappear for 7 years.
Yeah.
We wouldn't hear of them again. Then they'd come back, but it wouldn't make any sense why they'd come back at that time when they'd come back. It just feels like there's something a little bit more structurally sound about what Bangladesh is doing now compared to Bangladesh a couple of years ago, which was a little bit maybe more like Pakistan, where it's like, who's the next 16-year-old who's going to make 400 runs, right? Like, you know, I'm not saying don't look for the players with high upside, but if you don't look for the players with a high floor as well, you end up with a lot of players who have high upside, but actually they can't bat yet because they're like really young or they're still developing.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the 2007 World Cup, the ODI World Cup, and they had like a very small or young average age. It was like, what, 21, 22 was the average age of that side. There were so many teenagers in there. And I like the fact that they've gone back to Shomya Sakar. And also, Tanzeed Hassan, what I do know is that his style of play is attacking. We saw that in the World Cup as well. And he showed it over here in this game as well, 84 of 81. So if they stick to, you know, that opening pair, maybe in terms of approach and style of play, that can be a new chapter in Bangladeshi cricket up top. And, you know, Tamim, for all his success, had kind of slowed down a lot with the time. I mean, he started off as an aggressive opener, but...
Well, I mean, Tamim's one of those guys who probably was more aggressive in red ball cricket at times than he was in white ball. And we've seen that occasionally before, you know, just the way the fields work and everything. Some players feel more comfortable. The player I was looking for, Nitesh, just put it in the comments, was Rooney Talukdar. Just little signs like that, that there are things moving forward. There are still issues within, you know, Bangladesh cricket, obviously. Like, we all understand that. But there are just little signs that things... And I'm not going to lie. Sometimes it's just you have more talent. And so even when you make more mistakes as a cricket culture, you're kind of in an area where you can get away with them a little bit, which is, I mean, you could put Australia and Pakistan in that kind of thing. If sometimes it's like, yeah, they're going to make some mistakes, but eventually they're just going to have a bowler who bowls 90 miles an hour, or a batter who no one can get out for a period of time, and they're going to win some games. Maybe if they structured everything and got all the little pieces in place, that's when you hit that sort of, you know, peak performing era. But Bangladesh, it just feels like, having watched them, you know, over a little period of time now, it just feels like things are falling in place a little bit better than it was.
Yeah, and like Arco has mentioned in the comments as well, they won both those games, you know, chased it down with plenty of balls remaining. So it is a different approach now. And
that's
we
a good
like
comment,
that.
I think. Different approach is the most important thing. And a lot of that is just wickets as well. Like, so much of cricket is, what wickets are you on? And do the wickets help you? And Bangladesh wickets were not really set up for high scoring attacking players, right? They were set up for the sort of 120 or 150 ball guys, and that's what they produced.
And that, I feel, has held them back at times, but this seems to be the dawn of a new era. And another thing that happened in the series was that the old and the new kind of came together really well. I know I mentioned how Tamim is not part of the plans anymore and Shakib wasn't available for the series, but Mushfiqur Rahim is still around. He scored, 73 not out in the first game and scored more runs as the series went on, and then kind of mocked Angelo Matthews towards the end on the timed out thing. This has got to be the most bizarre rivalry I have ever witnessed in all of cricket. The Bangladesh-Sri Lanka Noggin Derby, or whatever you want to call it. They really go at it against each other, and it doesn't seem like a lot of them are friends, Jared.
It just seemed a bit childish, didn't it? Like, I'm just like, it's kind of... it's kind of like keeping the gag going when the gag's finished, if you know what I mean, of like, yeah, we get it, that happened and we were all there, and we are, I understand why it's going on, but it's certainly not a situation where
he's lost for words, guys. He doesn't know how to explain it.
I just think it's one of those things where you're dragging it on for no reasons. And of course, one day Sri Lanka is going to embarrass them somewhere, because you're not going to beat them all the time, right? And it's like, why would you? I always wonder, what's the end game here? What's the win that they're going to have for that sort of stuff? So, yeah, I always worry about that sort of stuff. Arco said Silla and Chittagong has slight pitches with even bouncing grass. I don't think the problem is actually as much their international and domestic wickets, by the way. Although there are a lot of those international and domestic wickets that don't have that, Arco. I think it's the wickets in general in the country. So it's very rarely what your international or your domestic wickets are. What did your players grow up on? And that was always the biggest problem in England. Even when they made county pitches a little bit flatter, there's a lot of people who just grow up playing cricket in England when the wickets are jagging around, and it meant that their batters prod with their pads first, traditionally, and that, you know, you had to get around that. Global warming's helped a little bit, but you know, these sorts of things do. It's the same with South African and spin, right? And you know, I've talked about that before with the we did a piece on the sweeping shot. So it is an issue in Bangladesh that so many of the wickets don't have. It's the pace of the ball. So it's not even bounce and grass, right? It is the pace of the ball onto the bat. Does it allow you to swing through the line? And, you know, if you want a perfect example of a team, you know, a culture change in that, it was New Zealand. You know, that New Zealand realized that the issue was that the wickets in New Zealand. So I'll put it this way. It's the best way of explaining it. No Bangladesh cricketer at the professional level ever needs to play on a Bangladesh style wicket, right? And here's the reason why. Because like if they never made any wickets like that, they will occasionally their wickets will still automatically default back to those things. So if at professional level, and I'm talking domestic cricket rather than international cricket here, there were no wickets that bounced like traditional or acted like traditional Bangladeshi wickets, they would still be better against those than anyone else. And that's what New Zealand really worked out, which was if you make flatter wickets domestically, it meant that your players naturally to get to 17, 18, 19, to get to professional cricket are already good on green wickets, right? Because you can't not be in New Zealand. But then you need to almost retrain them on the kind of wickets that they might be facing internationally. And New Zealand went with flat wickets because at that time, that was the rage in cricket. Hilariously now, not as much as it used to be. But, you know, that's what they did. And that's essentially, Bangladesh would be able to do that. And I do think that there's a lot of cricket nations in the world that if they thought about these things in a more, I'm trying to think of the best way of putting it, in a more revolutionary way, right? And went at this, they would actually find gains. Anyway, I know it's a moot point. The more important thing at the moment is that Bangladesh players are showing some of that natural intent. So hopefully there are ways that they can do that. But if you want to do it en masse and sort of change the way your players play, that is the best way of doing those sorts of things, of just making the professional wickets as much as you can.
And despite them not doing that, they've produced these talents, right? Like, we talked about Tanzeed and Shomash Sarkar earlier, but you've got Tauhid Ridhoi, who we always love to talk about. He got 96 as well. You got to produce more Tauhid Ridhois, right? And he developed from that system where he wasn't even like given those sort of environments to nurture, yet he scored an unbeaten 96 in the second ODI, and he's looked like that sort of player who goes hard at it. So that's the cultural evolution that Bangladesh probably require over here.
It's also, some of it is just mental. Like, I've talked about this a lot with India and Australia. Mm. I think up until very recently, they were always trying to make all their players be anchors, right? And there's no, so someone like Andrew Symonds, why would you make him an anchor? He doesn't need to have a batting average of 40 in ODI cricket. If he has a batting average of 30 at a strike rate of 150, he's going to terrify teams, right? And we know he had that within him. We know he had those gears within him. And we're seeing that with Indian players again and again, KL Rahul and Rishabh Pant. Stop making them anchors. So sometimes it is the conditions and sometimes it is the mindset of teams. And I think there was within Bangladesh cricket, I do believe there was an idea of we need to produce proper batters to get all the way through the innings. And I get that. That probably came out of the fact that they hadn't made many runs, right? Like, early part of their, of their development, they didn't have a lot of big run scorers. But eventually you need to develop and you need to move and, you need to be, a lot different than anyone else.
Yeah, and the way their team is setting up now, if they go with those two openers, Tanzeed and Shomia, and then you have an anchor in Shanto, you've got the likes of Ridhoi to come in later, Mushafiqur brings in that experience. Weirdly enough, they've gotten rid of Litton Das because I would have thought that he would just automatically take over the reins from Mushfiqur Rahim. But it seems like Mushfiqur is the guy for them for now. But it's interesting. I like where things are headed for them. And they are going to be part of the Champions Trophy. So these games are more important for them as opposed to Sri Lanka. But coming to Sri Lanka, now they might have lost the series, but there were some positives for them. Partham Nisanka has got to be the biggest one, I believe. In the last six innings in ODI cricket that he's batted, he's scored 300s and one of them was a double 100. And the strike rates have been impressive too. That's actually the main takeaway over here. What stood out is the pace at which he's scored those hundreds. He got one in this series as well. So that's got to be very, very promising for them going into the future.
Yeah, I think me and Estelle did a podcast coming into the World Cup because I think a lot of people had them as a bit of a sleeper team. And me and Estelle were like, really? And I think our theory was that, yeah, their bowling could do some damage. I think there's no doubt before that their bowling can do something and that they're quite handy from that perspective. But the other side of it is that, that their batting, even when it made runs slowly. And so they couldn't put a lot of pressure back on so their bowlers had to be absolutely brilliant. And we certainly saw some games where they were. And then unfortunately got injured a lot and then they got out of form and all sorts of things. This makes more sense. And you and I have talked about this with Pakistan as well.
Yeah.
If you make your bowlers win limited overs games again and again, you kind of need the greatest bowling attack of all time, right? Or a lot of luck. If you can put pressure on both sides of the ball, and we saw at times in that World Cup where Sri Lanka was actually scoring at a fast rate, that's what their players need to be able to do. And I think some of this is a natural freedom that probably England have brought from less so baz ball, but the white ball revolution, although I think baz ball plays a part of it as well. And some of this is probably just natural evolution of T20 cricket as well, where players are just so used to scoring slightly quicker, you know, they're more comfortable in doing so. So I do think there's a few different changes within that. But, you know, this is different than what we're talking about with Bangladesh. What we're talking about with Bangladesh really is newer guys turning up and being slightly more aggressive than we have seen players of previous generations. With Sri Lanka, we're talking about guys who were anchors, kind of changing who they are a little bit. And, you know, we saw it with Kusal Mendes, and now we're seeing it with Nisanka. And I find that really, really interesting. And, you know, whether it's just the freedom Chris Silverwood is, you know, giving them, or, you know, what the situation is, I don't know. But they look, I'm not willing to say that they're like a huge chance of winning any World Cups coming up, but they just look like a naturally more competitive team playing in that kind of style.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that ever since, you know, Sangakkara and Jayawardene, they hung their boots, and post T20 World Cup, when this is the first time I'm feeling like Sri Lanka is kind of rejuvenating into a competitive side in white ball cricket, because red ball at home, they always kind of turn up, especially versus Sena nations. You mentioned Kusal Mendes, of course, he started doing this before Nisanka. He also carried his good form from the T20, scored a 50 over here. You've got Charitha Salanka, who's been doing so well for so long, right? Like, he's been a proper mainstay in the middle order now, scored a 91 in the game that Sri Lanka won as well, that one solitary ODI. But neither were as impressive as Janith Lianage, the lower middle order batter, who now in 6 ODI innings, Jared, has scored 350s and 100. He scored a total of 346 runs at an average of nearly 70. And he was the leading run scorer in this ODI series as well. An unbeaten 101 in the last game, and also 67 in the first. And he bats at number 6. So he's turning out to be a great fix for Sri Lanka after they've got all those guys who've been playing for a bit, the Mendeses, the Samra Wickramas and Asalankas. Then you got this guy at 6, and that gives them, you know, more breathing space, and they can play more freely just because they know this guy can score runs at 6.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably not going to stay at 6 if he keeps playing the way he is, if we're being honest. Have you seen him bowl? I didn't see him bowl at all. I don't think he's a bowl, but my memory of him from my old database is that he could bowl a little bit as well. And not anything great or anything, but you know,
that's need him though, because Asalanka can roll over his arm.
No. I just meant my memory was of him traditionally was he was more of an all rounder. And so, you know, he's come in. Yeah, he's an odd player for number 6 in some ways. I don't know where they fit him in, you know, but as you said, maybe that's what they do. They've got a little bit of bowling up the order, and so they just think to themselves, you know, let's change that up a little bit and go with someone. I think that, to get back to Andrew Simon's thing from before, there are teams who think having a number 6 who is a frontline batter allows you to play a little bit harder. I suppose that we've seen South Africa, they're probably the best example of this, right? Of just being like, we're just going to back our top 6 to make a lot of runs. And you know, we see other teams who have a weaker number 6 who has some bowling skills or is a wicket keeper or whatever. Based on this, he looks like a very good number 6. I kind of want to see him in other positions. I was just looking up his record just now. Where is it? He's what, 28, 29. List A cricket averages 45 with strike rate of 84. You know, those are pretty solid numbers, but not an exceptional first class record or anything. So it's an interesting. He's an interesting player to keep an eye on. But as you said, in this particular series, the ability that allows for them to go a little bit harder at the top, knowing that you have some. I mean, that was always the thing with Rassie van der Dussen when he was averaging 70 or whatever it was, and David Miller never going out. The South Africans just knew that they could go a little bit harder at, you know, in that sort of middle period if they had to, and one of them would back them up every time. That's a huge advantage to have.
Absolutely. And, you know, they don't have to play any major ODI tournament till 2027. So they have that luxury of time. I know it kind of sucks that they're not going to be in the Champions Trophy, but still, they can kind of develop a team for, you know, 2027, and that gives them time. You've got Hasaranga at 7, and if they play Welalage at 8, that's a deeper batting lineup as well. Hasaranga actually had an interesting series, right? Came back from his ban, played a T20I, I believe, and then took like 4 wickets in the game that they won. In the first game, he went for runs and didn't take a wicket. And in the last game, he took 2 wickets. But do you remember we spoke about a guy in the last podcast who I said had a terrible record and pretty much had his best game ever in one of the T20s? where he scored 50 off 30 and took two wickets. Well, that guy scored 40 off 11 off Hasaranga and ended up with an unbeaten 48 off 18. His name is Rishad Hussain, and that's his best List A score. Former best was 12. So that's he's quadrupled that. And in no amount of deliveries as well, like 18 deliveries is nothing. And, you know, he's 21. They've kind of shoved him in there out of nowhere. Maybe there is something to this kid. Maybe I'm wrong and they know something I don't.
I mean, let's hope so. Look, it's he's worth watching, isn't he? Because, you know, how many times do we see a player like this and then they sort of disappear or you know, remember that Muhammad Harris, what was it, last T20 World Cup, and everyone was really excited, and then you looked at his stats and you went, he's done very, very well against like one or two types of bowling. This is going to be slightly tougher and slightly more varied for him. Sometimes those things just happen, and other times, you know, I suppose Tom Hartley and Shoaib Bashir, Matt Kuhneman, you know, we've seen players be picked based on talent before, and I don't ever think you shouldn't pick players for talent, but you should know why you're picking them and that they might need extra treatment if things go horribly wrong for them or if they get dropped. Because I think that's one of the worst things when you pick a young kid who hasn't done much professionally before. Mm. They do really, really well. It's actually the dropping that is sometimes the biggest problem, right? You know, you know, those sorts of things happen and the emotional state of how those sort of things go. But hey, man's, you know, living the life at the moment. Good on him.
Yeah, what, 2 sixes and 3 fours in one single over versus Hasaranga completely obliterated him. So joke's clearly on me, guys. And this guy, if he goes on to become the best leg spin bowling all-rounder since, I don't know, Rashid Khan or whatever, if you want to call Rashid Khan an all-rounder, then we can have a lot of fun with this in years to come.
Aubrey Faulkner is the greatest leg spinning all-rounder, and you should know that. Just what before, too, I was talking about Luke Wood, but I think I was talking about Luke Proctor as well, because there's two Lukes and they're both like late blooming English talent. So I think I was talking about too much of Luke Wood's batting, although I did see him make runs, I think at least a couple of times in this, which he hasn't done before. But
he
again,
scored some crucial sixes at times, but that was pretty much it.
But there was I can't remember which game I was watching when he did that, but he showed me that there was something there. And I don't really mean as a batting option. What I meant was he was thinking his way through a position in a game. And that's the sort of thing that you want for that sort of slightly higher level player, right? Because he's going to be in positions where he's going to have to go up against, you know, Virat Kohli and, you know, whoever, you know, all these different players. You want the thinking to be there. And that's why I was, there's too many Lukes. There's too many Ollies. There's too many Lukes. I don't really understand. There's too many Mitches.
Too many Chris.
Muhammad's. I mean, we need to go back to numbers for people's names.
There's Shamars now as well. You've got Shamar Brooks and Shamar Joseph. So excuse us whenever we make these mistakes. Both of us have this issue. And Arko has said over here that they've taken a punt on Rishad basically because he has exceptional slogging ability. Well, no shit. Hasaranga is one of the top players in the world right now. If he took him to the cleaners, then I'm sure there's something over there. But anyway,
also, like as a leg spinner, just before we go off him, just as a leg spinner in general, like, you know, you have to find leg spinners in Bangladesh. And so if you have one who can bat, it probably helps you play them at home. And then they're going to be more useful when you travel away from home. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what they might need as a leg spinning prospect, because we know that the wickets just don't soon leg spin as much as some of the other parts of Asia do.
Yeah, and having both him, if he obviously comes off, and Mehdi gives them more batting depth as well. So there's lots of good stuff over there happening. Anyway, that wraps up our discussion on Bangladesh versus Sri Lanka. We're going to take a short break and stay with us because we'll be talking about Afghanistan and Ireland on overthrows after this short break. So yeah, see you after this ad. Welcome back to Overthrows. You're with Behram and Jared. And before I actually get into the next topic, I see that a lot of you guys have questions regarding the PSL. It's not part of our itinerary today for this show. Maybe we'll do a red inker on it. I don't know. I have to discuss that with Jared still. Yeah. And because there are some takeaways that I have after covering the tournament. But you guys can send us super chats and I'd love to answer those questions. Right now, we're going to move on to Afghanistan versus Ireland. We had an ODI series.
Just before you go ahead, there's a bunch of comments about us talking about Bangladesh, Sri Lanka. Mm. We're talking about it because it's the major international cricket this week. And we talk about international cricket. If you don't like us talking about international cricket, go and find another podcast that just talks about your favorite team over and over again. This is a podcast that talks about the things in cricket that are going on in the global game, right? Like we did Afghanistan Island, and we'll do all sorts of different things, you know, as they come up to us. If you're going to comment about that, you can just disappear. There's no point watching the show. It's not for you to begin with. We're not going to listen to you, quite clearly, right? But also, this isn't the show for you. I don't know. Go find someone talking about the same talking points over and over again. Maybe India's number four batting position is someone's doing a podcast on that right now, I'm sure.
Jared made a video on that, by the way, on the actual channel. So you can actually go check that out if you really don't enjoy this. There's that. But the whole concept is to cover all sorts of global cricket that's happening international. And Afghanistan versus Ireland is actually quite a big series in my eyes because these are the two newest entrants who got full member test status. And now they're playing this full-on series. And the ODI series, let's talk about that before. One of the ODIs was abandoned and Afghanistan won the other two. The star of the show and player of the series was Rehmanullah Gurbaz, who scored 121 in one of those games and 51 in the second. Afghanistan obviously won both of those games. And he now has 605 50s in 40 ODI innings. I think that's a splendid record for someone who actually is a bit of a basher as well.
Yeah, I found that fascinating. Someone sent me that message the other day. I hadn't seen it either. So I was with you. I was a bit like, what? Has he? Because I was just doing some of the preview for the IPL. And when I was doing the preview for the IPL, I was like, you know, is he good enough to be able to make runs consistently? And you're like, well, he is in one day cricket. Now, and I haven't, you know, gone through his details. I haven't gone through his record in, you know, a huge amount at the moment. But my guess is that like he's made some scores against some decent teams in that, and Ireland have actually, you know, been quite good for a while. But he's like, you know, it's not like he's making all those runs against Netherlands. Like I'm just having a look now. He's made 100 against, 200s against Bangladesh, 2 against Ireland, 1 against Netherlands and Pakistan. That's quite a healthy, considering the amount of games he's played against all those teams. That's quite healthy if they were all against those teams, and it's from no matches. So I'm with you. It doesn't exactly make a lot of sense to me to go down that he's doing that, I should say. But good on him, and he should continue to make runs. Everyone should try and make runs if they can.
Yeah, he really kicks on once he gets a start at times. I feel like if he crosses 50, there's a good chance he's going to turn the game. I think he performed versus England, was it, in the World Cup? Maybe an 80-odd versus England, if I can't. Serves me correctly.
I think you're right. I think he's... actually, have a look. He's only ever played one game against him. He averages 80. So you're bang on. I remember, I think we did something on the scoreboard at the time. And we talked about it. He's an interesting player because kind of looks, as you said before, looks like he should be a T20 dasher, averaging like 27 with a strike rate of 150.
Yeah.
And yet somehow has managed to make one-day cricket kind of work for him. So, you know, it's... very, very interesting. Obviously, still very early on in his career. I know he's played an absolute ton of T20 games, but I don't think he's played that much of cricket outside of that. So none of his record kind of makes sense. It looks like someone has cut and pasted two different records from two different players and put them together on CricBuzz or CricInfo.
Yeah, definitely. And I think he complements Ibrahim Zadran really well because he's a proper anchor, right? And he's actually batting at first drop in T20 cricket, which I don't understand, but he's getting runs. He scored 72 in the final T20 international that happened today and scored an anchoring 50 in one of the ODIs as well. But we've talked about Zadran far too many times on this show, so we're not going to go over that again. I actually want to talk about the ODI captain, Hashmatullah Shahidi, because I was impressed with what he was able to offer in the ODI World Cup. I thought he was a washed player, and he kind of changed that notion in my head over there. And in this series, he scored two very, very contrasting knocks in both of the ODIs that Afghanistan won. There was a 33-ball 50, and then there was a 103-ball 69. So, that's quite a diverse skill set.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. It feels weird because he's like, what's the best way of putting it? He feels like he's a player in development, but he's also like the captain, right? Like he's
got to be old. I've been seeing this guy for a while.
You know? And so it feels like he's suddenly worked out maybe a year in his game or something has clicked because, if you would have asked me a while back, I don't know if I would have said he was washed. I just would have said he was always a sort of second tier player. Like if you have injuries or maybe the sort of guy that you want for your squad. I think that would have been absolutely fine. But that's a very different to what we're seeing at the moment. And there's so many kind of exciting storylines of some of their players at the moment. You know, when we talk about batting, and over the last couple of years, it's almost all been bowling, right? Almost since the beginning, if we're being honest, you know, it's been bowling. And suddenly it's like there's all these different players that have these fascinating, you know, transformations or numbers or whatever it may be. And I don't know how much Jonathan Trott has to do with this. I think some of it started before Trotty as well. So, you know, maybe him being there is helping, but it feels like some skills of these players have been unlocked.
Definitely. I mean, maybe they've gained a lot of confidence from that World Cup campaign. It was 4 wins out of 9, but you know, if it had not been for Glenn Maxwell, they were a decent shout for the semi-final as well. And Hashmatullah Shahidi was the captain then too. So maybe it's that, you know, hangover or whatever motivation that they've just carried through in their ODI team. Another, I wouldn't even call him a late bloomer. He's just an overall bloomer at this point. One of Afghanistan's best ever cricketers, Mohammad Nabi. I remember just on overthrows a couple of weeks back, I think they were playing Bangladesh back then. I think they were playing Sri Lanka back then. Mohammad Nabi scored his highest score in ODI cricket. Was a ton. And just now in this ODI series, he's got his first ever fifer. He returned figures of 5 for 17. Now, in one of the T20s, he scored a 38 ball 59. This man is just, he's not, you know, stopping at all. He's just getting better with age. And I really want to know what his diet looks like, because he's a fit bloke as well.
He must be in his 40s, right? I think he's listed at late 30s, but he must be in his 40s. And to think about, you know, obviously Rashid Khan's an incredible story. And, you know, we've had, you know, all these different players who've made it in international cricket and also playing in, you know, leagues like PSL and the IPL and the Big Bash. And, there's so many great stories. But Mohammad Nabi is kind of the most ridiculous one, because you're talking about someone who has like a 20-year career from a country that didn't have a 20-year career coming in.
Yeah.
Right. So when he started, they basically didn't have any cricket. And yet somehow he managed to make, I know that refugee camps and everything played a part, but somehow he managed to make a career from an industry that didn't really exist, and then he's doing it still in his 40s. And you know, like, who's he playing for? Is it Sun? No, who did he sign for in the IPL? I just did that thing, and I remember writing his name. But like, he's still in the IPL. He's probably still going to get some playing time, right? And you're like, what? What? I would say actually, he didn't get enough playing time at times in the IPL as well.
Back in Mumbai. The day. He was with Sunrisers. Yeah, you're right. He's with Mumbai now. He's probably not going to get...
Thanks to Darshan and Sheratowns as well. Yeah, so, yeah, it's just ridiculous. And, like, of all the teams, he's literally... Like, the Ambanis have bought everything in cricket, and then they bought Mohammad Nabi. Is like, you know, the greatest story of all time. He's a phenom. And I think at times he gets undervalued. And it's easy to do. I remember me and Sid Monger were just absolutely obsessed with his bowling because of how shit it looked. And we didn't mean that in a bad way, but just of like, he kind of looked like a slightly better version of Chris Gayle, but his numbers are not Chris Gayle-like numbers, right? And his batting, he has some like holes in his game, but then when it comes together, like there's nothing you can do against him on certain days. Just a phenomenal cricketer to be able to do it for that long.
He's also like really developed his slogging over the years. I feel like he's a reliable hitter at this point. And with the ball, he's gotten better. It's just something that defies biology. How Mohammad Nabi right now of today is a better player than Mohammad Nabi of 10 years ago. This is a guy who was also playing for the MCC at one point. I remember through those exchange programs and everything. So it's a fantastic story. Whenever he retires, we're definitely going to pod about him. And
if he retires.
If he ever retires. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to see him play in the T20 World Cup, because this is the best he's ever been. And it's quite the enigma, right? Speaking of enigmas though, Rashid Khan is back. And he was captain in the T20I series, which they won 2-1, and took 3 for 19 in his first game back after surgery and rehab, took 4 for 14 in the second, and also 1 for 12 in the third. So went for no runs, took 8 wickets in those 3 games, and then scored some of those ridiculous looking shots as well with the bat. And
was that in the second game? Which was the game he made the run? Yeah, second game, wasn't it?
Yep. 25 off 12, and that six, that weird looking six.
So second game, we got. I was watching it, and my son came in, and he was watching Rashid Khan bowl, and there was a ball he bowled. I want to say it's Barry McCarthy that pitched on middle stump and beat Barry McCarthy's bat by like a foot and a half. And my son's head exploded. He couldn't understand how anyone could miss a cricket ball by that much. And it was just, it was a remarkable period. And I think, I remember looking at that game, I think Ireland got off to a really good start. And I was checking the betting markets to see what they were thinking. And the betting markets were like, yeah, Ireland's a chance here. And I was like, they're not a chance here. Because Rashid Khan is going to come on to bowl at a certain point, and it's going to be game over. And that's what, it's such an important player to be able to have, and especially in T20 cricket, his ability to run through middle orders, especially. I love the way that Afghanistan use him in that kind of enforcer role, right? Like he's a fast bowler from the 50s or something. I'm just like, yeah, we'll wait until, and we're not going to use him against the openers. There's no point. But the minute there's a weakness here, we're just going to bring him on. No, absolutely. I love that. And as you said, coming back from rehab, looked fantastic, was spinning the ball a long way on those surfaces and whacked him as well. Like it didn't look like he was easing himself back in. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that if someone was to create a T20 team from scratch with an unlimited purse, Rashid Khan would be the first player that they would pick. For a lot of those people, that would be the case.
It takes a team as special as the Sunrisers to let him go.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of those players that the Sunrisers let go of and now have acquired and can't play in tandem. We'll get to all of that fun stuff someday. The IPL is just upon us. But happy that Rashid is back and at his best. And he's an absolute cheat code in the format. Like T20 cricket is something he absolutely owns. But it's not just the spinners, right? In the last T20, Afghanistan's pace battery kind of... they were essential towards bowling Ireland out for 98. That game happened today. I know Fazlehak hasn't gotten wickets in the T20Is, but he got a 4 for in one of the ODI games. And I like what I see from him. Also, the left arm angle is something that definitely helps them. But Naveen is back. He got 3 for 10. And then Azmatullah. This guy he's also someone whose trajectory is just going up and up and up. Sometimes he'll score quick runs with the bat and big runs with the bat. And today he took 4 for 9. So if you've got an attack of Naveen, Fazlehak, Azmatullah, Rashid, Nabi, Mujeeb, that is pretty damn good.
It's got kind of everything that you need, right? Defensive spinner, a part-time spinner who can bowl for matchups, a wrist spinner who is also attack new ball bowlers who can also bowl Yorkers at the death, and an all-rounder who can kind of pinch hit in a couple of different roles. We've talked about him a lot, and obviously he's going to be in the IPL as well. So it'd be fascinating to see how he goes there. We see a lot of those sort of West Indian all-rounders play in, get picked up for big money in the IPL, and they really struggle with the spin when they get to that level, right? I do wonder if that is something that's slightly easier for an Afghanistani all-rounder to be able to do from that point of view. But yeah, you're right. It's a really good six-person attack. How their bat, from a World Cup point of view, because that's kind of what we're looking at, right? How does that go? I still think, I didn't think they were going to do as well as they did in the One Day World Cup. So who knows what they'll do in the T20 World Cup. I still think their batting is maybe a little bit thinner than what they need. But you're right. They've got two, and if you throw Rashid Khan's hitting in there, they've kind of got three guys who can bowl and hit and bat a bit. That's a great flexibility to have in any team. And, it's kind of overkill for Ireland at the moment because, once it gets to the middle, Ireland just get themselves stuck in a lot of those games. But it's, fantastic for Afghanistan. It'd be really interesting to see how they go from there.
I mean, if you look at the depth over there, right, Mohammad Nabi is probably better with the bat as opposed to him with the ball, even if the numbers in recent times suggest otherwise, because he's been terrific with the ball as well. But Mujeeb has started to hit. There was this ODI against Pakistan, I believe, in which he hit the fastest ever ODI 50 for an Afghan batter. And he's no mug. Rashid, we know, can do things with the bat. Azmat also has impressed big time with the bat. So the only people who can't bat in all of these guys that I just named are maybe Naveen and Fazlehak Farooqi. So you've got your batting up until 9, which is a great luxury to have, especially in T20.
Yeah. I think you're pushing it a little bit with Mujeeb. I know he has made runs. He's certainly improved. He's not what he was. I reckon I was at a game, which was maybe the first time he ever made it to double figures or something. It was something ridiculous like that. He was batting at number 11. And I think he broke the record for a big bash player batting at number 11. But even so, he's certainly a lot better than he used to be. So yeah, that flexibility, the ability to have players who can play, who can give you something on the other side of the ball without not all those players are great in their second skill, right? Mm. But they have something to offer in their second skill. And more often than not, they're pretty good with their first skill or great with their first skill. So there's a lot that allows you flexibility of tactics, allows you flexibility of selection. It can cover injuries at times, all those sorts of things. So I think it's a really important one.
Yeah, I think the third skill is what would be an issue for them because we've seen Afghanistan drop a lot of catches.
Mujeeb cannot field, correct.
Yeah, yeah. He cannot field at all. And it's interesting how I've noticed Alex Hales can also not field at all. Dropped so many catches this PSL, but maybe that's a conversation for another time. We've spoken enough about Afghanistan.
Just unnecessary drive-by of Alex Hales, but he can't field. You're right.
Yeah. Anyway, Ireland, of course, only were able to win one of those games out of the 5 completed fixtures on this limited overs tour. And I mean, of course, they were in alien conditions, but they won a test match over here. So it's not like they not remember mm-hmm. this tour. And Harry Tector was probably the star of the show for them, scored 138 in an ODI and then scored 56 of 34 in the T20 International that they actually won. So he's been the most promising batter, I believe, for them coming through the ranks. And he just keeps on adding more runs to kind of solidify that notion. It's him and Locke and Tucker. Right.
Yeah, I think Lorcan Tucker, I've talked about it a lot. Low-key obsessed with Lorcan Tucker. But I think Lorcan Tucker probably surprised everyone with how quickly he developed. Hmm. Harry Tector was the one they were expecting to be the, you know, their mainstay of their batting. Hmm. Sort of tall, elegant, not the sort of batter that, with all due respect to many of my friends who are Irish batters, but not that, you know, he's not Ed Joyce or, you know, or Owen Morgan or Gary Wilson or, you know, Niall O'Brien. Those are the sort of batters that they've kind of produced. And, you know, William Porterfield and then, you know, Harry Tector's more like a Rassie van der Dussen type of batter, you know, slightly more mechanical at times, you know, long levers, you know. So from that perspective, I think, you know, he's a little bit different and he takes the eye, but Lorcan kind of jumped him just because of how brilliant Lorcan was over that, whatever it was, 12 or 18 months there. But Harry Tector is the one that they kind of think that their batting will be built around in the future. Yeah. You know, that Andy Balburnie was supposed to be the other one. And unfortunately for them, Andy Balburnie just took too long to develop and he's become a very good player, but, you know, sadly quite late in his career. Whereas, you know, with Harry and Lorcan, those are younger players coming through showing this, but they're still very, very dependent, I think, on that sort of Sterling Balburnie opening. But, you know, you've got Tucker and Tech, but then you've also got Camphor and Dockrell, and I'm missing someone, Delaney. Yeah, Gareth Delaney behind them. That's still like, that's more. What's the kindest way of putting this? Because I know that one of the Irish lads will watch this. That's kind of an high energy batting is the way I would put those guys. Do you know what I mean? That they try, all those guys try really, really hard, right? But that's why you need your top guys to make a lot of runs because you know they're gonna. You want Camphor to come in when you're in a decent position and he can cause some chaos, right? You want Delaney to come in when you just need his hitting and you want Dockrell to come in for, you know, in a similar sort of situation. You don't want them to be coming in with lower scores because, you know, to go back to your point before about Sri Lanka having a number six who, you know, is just, you know, always scored runs at list A level. George Dockrell is a frigging bowler, right? Yeah. like, you know, it's a completely different situation to be in. So yeah, I think it's a really, really fascinating situation. So it puts a lot of pressure on Lorcan and Harry, who are still developing as cricketers, right? Like they're not the finished product and they didn't have the big advantage that those other Irish batters have. They don't have 6 and 7 and 8 years of county cricket, right? Of playing game after game after game and then occasionally going on tour with Ireland. It's a lot harder to develop those kinds of players, but I think the Harry Tector is a genuine international quality batter. Whether he's going to be a star or not, I don't know, but I think there's a lot to like there.
I feel like at times maybe Ireland would do better if they kind of promote him in T20s, maybe send him out to open. Because Sterlo, sure, he'll hit you that odd 50 here and there, but he's in the twilight of his career. And if I send Paul Sterling at any phase of a T20 game, if he comes off, I feel. So maybe give.
So Sterling bats lower in the test team, doesn't he? Does he bat five or something in the test team?
He does.
It's an interesting one. Look, I've done a whole video about how Andy McBrien was used as a pinch blocker, right? They know they're a batter and a half short. With all due respect to George Docker, what a frigging turnaround of a career that has been. Like, he should be so proud of himself to be on the, from a bowler who people thought would bowl for England to a guy who was on the scrap heap who couldn't bowl anymore, all the way back to a batter for his country. Incredible career. But if you're relying on guys like George Shockrell to do that, it does tell you that you're missing a couple of batters there, right? Yeah. So maybe they don't want to get too, I was going to say coy. Coy is the wrong word. Too funky with it. But I see your point as well.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, both of those guys got runs, right? So Tector and Tucker, they'll definitely be carrying Ireland.
It's so annoying that they, Tector and Tucker. Is that not annoying to you? We just talked about all the Lukes and the Ollies and the Muhammads and the Mitches. Tector, I hate it so much. And they're not even that similar, those names, but there's something about it. And as I have said before, Luke and Tucker, just a brilliant name. If you're writing a young adult book about some, you know, some science fiction book about a, you know, a teenage girl, she's at one stage going to have a run in with a Lorcan Tucker. Like, he's going to be the secondary. Maybe I read too many science fiction books in when I was a teenager, but I'm pretty sure Lorcan Tucker was a character in at least one of them.
Yeah, well, Lorcan Tucker actually bagged a PSL deal this time as well. He played a couple of games for Lahore, but Shaheen, of course, promoted himself ahead of Lorcan Tucker. But good on Lorcan for scoring 85 in one of those games. But obviously, Shaheen was going to come and bat ahead of him, right? Because we know what sort of captain he is. You mentioned George Dockrell and how once we thought that this guy is going to be Ireland's main spinner for the next decade, that didn't quite pan out. But there was a leg spinner in their ranks this time who won them a T20 international versus Afghanistan in conditions that favored Afghanistan. And his name is Ben White, got 4 for 20. And I haven't seen much of him, so I'll let you do the talking on this one.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember when Ben White first came on my radar, but I think someone sent me a message about him a while back. You know, he's come through the system. I want to say this correctly, just so the Irish fans don't have a go, but I think he is, he played junior cricket all the way through in Ireland. And I know, you know, so I don't know, this is the best way of putting it. I don't know what it's like to be a young wrist spinner in Ireland because we haven't seen many, right? Like it's not something that we have a good, history of, right? So
he's also, you know, never going to be the most famous Ben White because I believe Arsenal, the football club, their center back is Ben White. So there's that. Yeah.
Well, I think the interesting thing with Ben White for me is, but you are right, there is a footballer called Ben White. But the interesting thing for me is that he's played a little bit in Test cricket now and not been successful so far. I think probably in the short term, I'd be trying to play him a little bit more in limited overs cricket. And see how he goes on that kind of level. But what I am interested in is the fact that him and Gareth Delaney are quite often playing in the same side. And so the reason that Ben White exists outside of Test cricket is because Gareth Delaney's bowling hasn't quite, I don't even know how much he's bowling anymore, but his bowling hasn't quite stayed up with where it needs to be, right? Like, you know, that was part of their original plan was going to be for him to bowl a lot more. And I'm, you know, I think I'm just trying to remember if last year. Yeah. So his last three T20s, he's bowled 7 overs. He bowled 21 overs in the 8 in the year before that. And so they're giving Ben White a go. Ben White has a fantastic record in T20 domestic cricket. That's my memory of Ben White. And I remember because someone asked me about him on a wagon wheel, like, because we saw him play in a couple of their test matches. And I said that I think he has a long way to go. I think they just need to travel with him, get him to develop. What you would love for someone like Ben White would be, and this might sound like a step backwards, you'd really love for him to play club cricket in Melbourne, Sydney, Auckland, somewhere like that for a while, just develop his game outside of Ireland and see how he goes. But, you know, he can bowl leg spin. It's just, I don't know how much, I mean, I bowled leg spin on a pitch in Dublin once and got hit for a 6. I think at the university ground, the main ground in Dublin. it didn't feel like it was the greatest surface. Actually, that might have been AstroTurf. I can't even remember. But I do remember getting hit for six over there. I would think that if you're looking at how leg spinners would develop, it would not be the most ideal situation for leg spin to develop in. So if they do think they've got something of him, he kind of just needs to travel, right, and play in other places.
Yeah, and the more he plays in the UAE, I suppose, will definitely help him. And maybe if he does well enough, if some franchise T20 gigs come calling, then that could do his limited overs career well. But as you said, if he goes and spends some time playing first-class cricket, that's probably the best development he can...
Any cricket. Like, do you know what I mean? Just, I think for those sorts of guys, you just need to get him out of the system, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's... You know, with all due respect to Irish cricket, like it's probably just a little bit too one-dimensional. Hmm. And what you need for him is, if you can get him a crappy T20 contract somewhere, or you know, get him playing club cricket in Sydney or Melbourne or whatever that may be. You know, that's really what he needs at the moment. But you look at his record, sort of domestically. So he's played. As a bowler at the moment, this is his record for Ireland. I don't know if all these are internationals, but his record for Ireland, he's got a bowling average of 21 at 7.4 runs and over. And in domestic cricket in Ireland, he's done even better. Like, he's picking up bags of wickets. He just needs to develop, like, you know, and as quickly as possible for them, because if he's a good leg spinner, that's a huge advantage over Netherlands and Scotland. And those are the other two main European sides that they have to go up against a lot. But also, I promise you, the most important thing for them is that it means the Irish batters will face more leg spin in the nets of a higher quality. And no cricket team I've ever covered in my life needs to see more leg spin than the Irish cricket team. They do play it like it was invented yesterday, and they do not understand it. It's a bit like if I threw you a BlackBerry and I told you to rewire it, and you'd be like, what's a BlackBerry? Do people still use these? And
ironically, I went to the University of Waterloo, and that's where the headquarters were. That's where the BlackBerry was made. So I might manage.
I've always seen you as a BlackBerry man. I don't know what that means.
I used to have one. I used to have one after they kind of ran obsolete. But anyway, yeah, good stuff that they have that leg spinner up their ranks. And I mean, if they somehow qualify for the Caribbean leg of the World Cup, that would be great, because he could be, you know, of good service. Yep. But thinking of that World Cup, and this is the final talking point of overthrows today, Ireland are pitted against India, Pakistan, USA and Canada in their group. And obviously,
so they'll have clean sweep for Ireland then.
They'll have to upset one of India or Pakistan. And I mean, the last time they played Pakistan in the West in one of those World Cups in cricket, well, they upset them. So
a good time zone.
Yeah, definitely good time zone. Unluckily enough, St. Patty's Day is not coinciding with it, because it did last time. But I feel like if there's one guy who hypothetically could get them, you know, to that next round, it has to be Josh Little, right? He is that X factor, left arm pacer. Got some wickets on this tour as well, particularly that 3-for-18 in Ireland's win, the only solitary win that they had on this tour. So I feel like if they are to somehow progress, it's going to have to be on the back of Josh Little. I don't see any other way.
I'm trying to think of another way that it can work. I mean, I suppose Lorcan can have two or three big innings. We saw the way he played against Australia in that last World Cup. I don't think Sterling's going to win them enough games anymore. I mean, you're probably right, aren't you? But, you know, Josh Little is a good player. I mean, he's arguably, and this is going to annoy some people in Ireland, but he's arguably the best player Ireland has ever produced already. And I don't mean that to disparage all the great old Irish players, because I don't want Alan Lewis sending me a text message. But what I mean is, there's never been a player who's been able to progress to the level of Josh Little so early on with such a high ceiling that he has. I still think Mark Adair can rip through some lineups as well. But their batting is a little bit more, as we talked about before, a little bit more made with cardboard. So it's not as solid.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll take this final super chat before we end overthrows. And Anish has said that he never thought the WPL would take over the streets. You know what? It's fantastic to watch. I mean, I didn't even think that it would generate so much fanfare. I look at my TL and everyone was just going off on the WPL. And I didn't follow the tournament, but learned so much about it. We have a little bit of a segment on this in Uncovered. But just love to see it. I love how the women's game is really, you know, garnering interest globally. And the WPL can be that league that kind of lights that up on wildfire.
Yeah, I did think it would have this kind of interest. And I wrote about it in 2018 that it was the biggest mistake that they made, not having a women's league. But it's been fantastic. I was at my kid's concert yesterday while the game was on. And I was like trying to get my phone to connect to the video and sort of in between watching the concert and watch the game. And I couldn't watch it. It was so frustrating to me. And I just think, you know, we've seen this with the Women's Big Bash and the 100 and everything that the IPL touches, women or men, is just at a different level, right? Mm. And so that's what we've seen there. And it's been absolutely fantastic seeing the crowds and the interest. Yeah. I had a friend actually contact me and he was complaining. And he said, God, the IPL's about to start and almost none of the, no writers have done, you know, really good statistical analysis of all these tournaments. And I said, yeah, but if you look at the women's coverage, it's been absolutely fantastic. Mm. So I wonder how many of those people haven't written their IPL previews yet because they've been off working on the WPL. And, you know, if even a fraction of that is true, that is absolutely massive, those sorts of things. And, you know, when I started working for Cricket Info, and I've said this before, in 2012, I covered women's cricket at the 2012 World Cup like it was men's cricket. And I was literally told not to. They were like, it's pointless. There's no reason to do this and everything else. And you look at where we are 12 years on, and we've still got so far to go, but there's a whole generation of kids growing up now who see women's cricket as just another part of cricket. That was not the case when, you know, me and Bayram and some of you were kids out there. So it has changed so quickly. It's incredible.
Definitely exponential change over there. And I mean, we've mentioned in previous podcasts as well how, you know, they're getting better salaries and a lot of women's cricket isn't professionalized. So a lot of them are amateurs. So maybe we're headed towards a future where, you know, how we talk about the franchise T20 model dominating and kind of overthrowing international cricket, it might happen in the women's game quicker than in the men's. That's something that we've definitely spoken of earlier. But anyway, on that note, we shall end this episode of Overthrows. And thank you everyone in the comments section who was interacting with us and showed up at this odd hour. We apologize for the delay, of course. There was the PSL final and everything. But we'll be back with another episode of Overthrows next week. That'll be all for today. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bayram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.